We have put together, I think, the most extensive and inclusive voter fraud organization in the history of American politics. Let me say it again.
The 2020 election was the most secure
election in American history.
Let me begin by asking a very simple question. Do we know the truth about what really happened in the 2020 election?
I think millions of Americans know something went wrong, and they have little pieces, and no one's really put it together.
I'm agnostic on this question, and I am awaiting more information.
If I believed the president were a Nazi, I might steal an election.
Bold accusations require bold evidence, and they haven't seen it.
We have been working on something big.
Show me the money.
Can we meet? I've been working with Greg Phillips. He has a deep background in election intelligence.
True the Vote has the largest store of election intelligence for the 2020 elections in the world. No one has more data than we do. We identified in Atlanta 242 mules that went to an average of 24 drop boxes. But Philadelphia alone, we've identified more than 1,100 mules.
What is a mule?
Person picking up ballots and running them to the drop boxes.
This is not grandma walking her dog. Bad backgrounds, bad reputations. They are interested in one thing, that's money.
And in no shape, in no way, in no time is that legal.
This is organized crime.
Do you have video evidence?
4 million minutes of surveillance video around the country.
All right, that's the opening of the trailer to the documentary 2,000 Mules, produced by Dinesh D'Souza. That was Catherine Ingebrecht's voice, and also Greg Phillips, who works with her. True the Vote, of course, is her organization, and they produced that video, which was pretty powerful, talking about some of the malfeasance that they found. But, of course, in the 2020 election, there were lots of other things. There were lots of mail-in ballots. There were lots of false signatures. There were lots of dead people that voted. There were manipulations, it would seem, by voting machines. Laws were changed in states. It was the most massive corruption of our election season or election I'd ever seen in my life. And that's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to be discussing sacred trust, election integrity, and the will of the people with Congressman Jody Heiss. You can call us at 662-821-2040, 662-821-2040. You can send us an email at sandy@afr.net, sandy@afr.net. Most of you know, but some of you don't, at podcasts. You find them on podcast platforms. That's easy for those of you who are accustomed to it. But if you're not, go to afr.net. That's our home base. That's American Family Radio. And you can find the podcast, Sandy Rios, 24/7. You can go to my website, sandyrios.com. That's very simple, too. And listen to the show without fretting. You know, as the headlines read time and time again, pop stars will dedicate proceeds from their concerts to abortion. Well, it's time to flip the script and fire back. Let's go on the offense and save these babies. Preborn is leading the charge in the battle for life. Their network of clinics are positioned in the highest abortion areas in the country, often right next to Planned Parenthood. Every day, they welcome 200 babies whose lives have been rescued from the clutches of death. By introducing a mother to her child on ultrasound, a baby's chance of life doubles. Mothers and babies are showered with God's love and assistance for up to 2 years. Can we, the pro-life community, rock out for life this year? Every time you see a celebrity donating to death, we can respond by donating to life. When they shout abortion, we shout life. One ultrasound is just $28. If you would like to help us save the lives of these babies and many, many times the lives of the moms too, not physically, but spiritually, go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. All right, well, it's time to take out a pencil and paper because the election of 2024 is coming up, and this will be a conversation that will help you get your mind ready and figure out what you yourself might be able to do to make sure that we have free and fair elections in the United States of America in this election season. Coming up, sacred trust, election integrity, and the will of the people with Congressman Jody Heiss on today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness, that we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice. Not social justice, but God's justice. What's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up. Speak up. Say something. Do something.
In a long overdue provincial election, Kirkuk elects its local council. Security forces cast their ballots in 135 polling stations ahead of the rest of voters on Monday.
The turnout has been remarkably high since the early morning. No irregularities have been reported. There are 13,000 observers from NGOs and more than 14,000 from political entities.
These are among more than 57,000 special voters in the province who belong to the Defense and Interior Services, as well as paramilitary popular mobilization units and the Peshmerga forces.
We call on all Iraqis to take this opportunity and invest our votes in qualified candidates, and we call on candidates to serve all Iraqis without discrimination or sectarian nepotism.
I have come here today to give my voice to those I believe will make Kirkuk stand on its feet again.
That was an incredibly golden, wonderful moment in 2010, after the full force of the Iraqi war, when Americans tried to set the foundation for democracy in Iraq, and thousands and thousands of Iraqis came to vote. Remember the blue fingers? They would dip it in the ink and they were showing their blue finger. It really was thrilling because they captured a glimpse of what it's like to have a voice, to be able to choose, to not be ruled by a dictator. Even the Iraqis got that. So now here we are in our country right now facing so much election malfeasance, coming up on a presidential election, losing trust in voting for our own congressmen, representatives, presidential candidates. And so a new book has just come out called Sacred Trust, Election Integrity and the Will of the People. It's written by Congressman Jody Heiss. Congressman Heiss is from Georgia. He served there from 2015 to 2023 as a congressman. He was one of the founding members of the House Freedom Caucus. And he's written the importance of election integrity. He says, the overwhelming majority of people can accept the outcome of an election, though they might be deeply disappointed if their candidate loses. But no one should be willing to accept an unfair voting system. And so Congressman Jody Heiss joins me this morning. Good morning, Jody. Thank you for joining me.
Oh, Sandy, I can't tell you the privilege it is to be with you. Thank you for being a strong and clear voice for our country in these turbulent days that we're living in. And this is certainly yet another very critical topic that we're talking about.
Yes, absolutely. And we're going to get into that, but I want to set some groundwork because I know that I interviewed you a long time ago on the morning show, but it's been a long time. And I want to make sure my audience understands who you are and your background and why you can write a piece like this that's so powerful. As I said before, you were a congressman from Georgia that started in 2015. That's right before Trump was elected. Before that, you were a pastor. You did a radio show called The Jody Heiss Show, and you pastored churches. You went to Southwestern Seminary. I found that very interesting, Jody, and it makes me – and then I have to say that you currently serve as vice president for president for FRC Action and senior vice president at Family Research Council. That's a hate group, right, Jody? I saw that on the
That's
list.
That's what they say.
I was looking through the SPLC, just to get my marching orders. Anyway, so Jody, you grew up, you were born in Atlanta. What about your background prepared you or led you into talk radio and also, for that matter, totally different, being a pastor? What was your early life like, to sort of the crucible that set that in motion?
Yeah, you know, Sandy, it's great. I don't really get this asked this question a whole lot, but I was I was so incredibly blessed to be raised in a strongly Christian family. My parents were deeply committed believers, and my brother and I, it's just the two of us, but I honestly do not remember a time that we were not actively engaged in church and hearing the gospel. My parents lived it out, and at age 13, I surrendered my life to Christ, and later that very same year, I felt strongly called in the ministry, and to be honest with you, from that point on, as a young teenager, every major decision in my life was focused towards preparation for ministry, and I did. I served as a pastor for over 30 years, never dreamed I would do anything else, never wanted to do anything else, but God had some different plans. We actually had a couple of major battles that came my way while pastoring, one involving the ACLU, the other involving the IRS, two different battles, but both of them took on national focus. And they, both of the battles individually, respectively, kind of pushed me out of the pulpit and into a more national arena that I had never been accustomed to, never dreamed of, but it just kind of pushed me out to take a stand. And it was out of those battles that the radio program started. A local radio station asked if I would give updates as to the case going on, and that became popular and grew and grew. We ended up on some 400 stations nationwide daily out of that. And then the second battle with the IRS was over the Johnson Amendment and what can be said and not said from pulpits. And Alliance Defending Freedom backed us up with that. But I was one of the original 33 pastors in the country to challenge that Johnson Amendment. And so, you know, those kind of pushed me out of the pulpit, to be honest with you. It's kind of like the Lord just kind of pushed me out and put me in arena that really just provided a different pulpit for me, Sandy, is what happened. And our representative ended up resigning, and people started asking my wife and I to pray about running for Congress. And one thing led to another. So that's how, bottom line, that's kind of how we got there.
Yeah, Jody, we have in that regard, we have a lot in common. I was raised Southern Baptist. I never used to say that when I was on radio in Chicago because I knew no one would understand that. Nor would they really respect that. I mean, they wouldn't have understood. But I say it now because it's true. It's part of my past. But we always thought that ministry was, you know, you are the pastor, you're the youth director, or you are, if you're called to ministry, you do something like that. But, of course, you and I both know that is so limiting on God's call in our lives. It's in Him that we live and move and have our being. If we are a truck driver, if we are graze chickens and produce eggs, whatever we do it for His glory. And whatever we do, I think our work is sacred. Even if you're a waitress, there's ministry everywhere. So the line is just not that. It's just not that, like what we thought it was.
It's all kingdom work. Whatever God has given your hands to do, it's all about Him. It's all kingdom work. You're exactly right.
Well, of course, because of your past, you brought to your seat in Congress and to your founding of the Freedom Caucus that passion for truth. And boy, Jody, I've not been in Congress, but I've been on the front lines of battles. It's not easy to maintain your, especially in the political arena. I don't think I could have done that, to be honest with you. I was asked to run for Senate in Illinois years ago against Dick Durbin. Can you believe that? Don't you wish I'd won? Mm. But anyway, I didn't.
Oh, yes.
I didn't. I decided not to run. I had two members of one from a senator and one a congressman who I knew very well. And they both called me within 30 minutes of each other and said, don't do that. You can't do that. You can't do that. So, that's just a sideline. How was it hard for you to maintain your?
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead. Your principles.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt your question, but you know, to kind of go along with your story, I was not in Congress for 3 months, to be honest, and I was seriously saying, I want a recount. What am I doing here? This place is nuts. And I felt like I want to demand a recount. Surely I couldn't have really won this thing. But, you know, two things. There were things about Congress that were better than I anticipated. For example, I very much anticipated being pretty much a loner spiritually. Out there for prayer meetings and Bible studies all over Congress. In fact, I had one in my office for years and well attended. And you know, so that was a pleasant surprise. On the other side, it was extremely difficult to move the needle. There is a lot of backstabbing, a lot of, you know, all the swamp-like stories that you hear, which I talk a good bit about in my book. I bring up some of those issues. But, you know, I just found it essential to get up early every morning and have my quiet time and prepare for the day and just prepare my heart for whatever the day was going to hold before me. And without that, I don't know how I could have survived Congress. The schedule is intense beyond description. The deception is real. The warfare, the regular threats to my life, to my family, I mean, it's consistent. All those things wrapped up, I had never been accustomed to before. It was a huge learning curve, but God is faithful. Now, you know, at the end of the day, He had me prepared for it, and it was the greatest honor of my life.
You know, Jody, my personal commitment in my public life as president of Concerned Women for America and the other roles that I played in D.C. and other places was just to never look. I don't know if this is possible. For a congressman, never get off the never start a tributary. Don't ever compromise. And I don't mean on taxes. I don't mean on things that don't matter, but on the deep issues, do something that is against mm-hmm. your conscience. Because once you do that, that's what I think a lot happens to a lot of congressmen. They think they can do this one thing just this one time for the good that they're going to do when they get back on the straight and narrow. And it doesn't work, does it?
It doesn't work, and I'll give you a clear example of that from Congress. I was told early on, like from orientation week onward, that, you know, we're a team. If you want to be an effective member of Congress, then you need to get on the right committees and blah, blah, blah. Well, it comes to find out if you want to get on the right committee, you get there by compromising your way to get there. You start voting for things that leadership wants you to vote for, even if it goes against your moral or spiritual or political grain. They want you to vote for certain things, and you know, those type of things in order to get on committees, and they tell you then you can have some influence. And all of that is just not true. You have influence by defending and standing for truth and for your constituents who elected you to office and not compromise. You're either going to be loved in Washington and hated back in your district, or you're going to be loved in your district because you stand for what you said you were going to stand for. And if you do that, you're going to be hated in Washington. But you can't have both. You can't have your cake and eat it, too, in Washington. It's one or the other. You're going to become a Washington swamp creature, or you're going to stick with what you told your constituents you would do. And if you do that, like most of the Freedom Caucus have done, you're going to end up being hated in Washington and the scapegoat, the blame for everything, all the ills of our country.
Indeed. And that's why my listeners always hear me talking about the Freedom Caucus, because to me, they're the champions. You know, since you founded it, and Jody, I don't even remember the very founding. I just remember, I don't remember that early stage. In fact, it'd be interesting. I know this is off topic. Forgive me, but I'll get back to topic in a second. What was the catalyst that started this? I do know, but was there an incident? And who started it with you? Was it Mark Meadows? And just tell us that.
Yeah,
just a little.
Let me be clear. I was not one of the founders. I was one of the founding members. So
okay.
It actually started with Mark Meadows, Jim Jordan, Mick Mulvaney, Raul Labrador, Matt Salmon. Those guys really, the term before I arrived in 2015, they had just come to realize that the so-called Republican conservatives were not moving the needle at all. In fact, the conservatives were constantly being pushed and shoved under the rug. So they decided we've got to coalesce together and start something that's going to be a force. And that was underway, those discussions, when I was elected. And so when I arrived in January of 15, they knew who I was by what I had on, but I was very outspoken during the campaign. And so when I arrived, they immediately kind of put their arms around me and said, look, we're starting this group. Do you want to be a part of it? And it was like, absolutely. So I came in after the momentum was already going, but I was one of the original members to get it started. And but yes, you're correct. It was Meadows and Jordan and those guys who actually started it. I was just a founding member.
Yeah, well, you weren't just. I mean, you were a powerhouse yourself. I remember. You did some wonderful things. You stood your ground. And well, I guess this is Congressman Jody Heist. He is the senior vice president at FRC and the president of FRC Action. And he's just written a great book called Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People. All right, so let me get to the nuts and bolts, Jody. Where were you on the election night of 2020? Where were you? What were you doing?
Yeah, I was at home watching like everyone else was doing, and you know, everything was looking good and great until all of a sudden came across the page on the television that there's been a water main break and they've shut down everything in Georgia. I recall right then saying, we've got problems. Something is happening. And sure enough, as we woke up the next morning, everything had changed.
Boy, it had. And we were there. I mean, we were watching too, just jaw-dropping. Jaw-dropping, Jody. Never experienced anything like that in all my years, in almost all my entire life since I was a child. We watched election returns as a family. And I had never seen anything like what we saw, the shutting down, stopping counts everywhere. So, but you're from Atlanta. So this is, why has Atlanta, Georgia almost become ground zero in the whole election integrity, certainly the 2020 issue? I think of that scene, and I forgot the arena's name, but the videos that we saw of them stopping the counting and the whole lawsuits and all of that that came from the mother and her daughter who appeared to be re-entering ballots. You know, we have to say, choose our words carefully here. They actually sued President Trump, I think, and won lots of money for that. But we all saw the breakdown, not just in Georgia. Then we have Raffensperger behaving very strangely. Then we have the call between President Trump and Raffensperger. And so President Trump is actually charged for something he said in that call, which sounded like, when they pulled out an edited version, that he was asking Raffensperger to find false votes or to create more votes so that he could win, which was not the truth. And now we have Fannie Willis charging all of the attorneys around him with racketeering and all of this circus. Why, Jody, why do you think that's all that Georgia and Atlanta has become the hub of all of that?
Well, I tell you, it goes beyond Georgia. And this is what, Sandy, got me involved in. I did not go to Congress with election integrity on my radar. That was not one of the driving forces for me. But I was a senior member on the Oversight Committee when COVID came. And immediately, like the very week after we had our first documented case in the United States out of Washington State, the very next week, Democrats held a hearing in Oversight that basically started the groundwork of why we need to change election laws. We're about to face an epidemic across this country. People are not going to be able to go to the ballot box. They may be in lockdowns, whatever the case. They just started this whole litany, and it was one hearing after another, after another, after another, of the necessity to change election laws. And then they added a second layer that we have voter suppression all across the country, and they used Georgia as Exhibit A in that argument. And that, I knew Georgia, and I knew what they were describing was not accurate. And so I started pushing back, and that was the beginning of me getting very much involved in this whole election integrity battle. And of course, Stacey Abrams comes to the plate, so to speak, no pun intended with what she did with Major League Baseball, but she comes to the plate to run for governor, and she does not concede. She blames voter suppression. And Georgia just kind of became the place for the epicenter of, you, if you will, of election issues. And again, I write a good bit about this and the background of it all, but that's kind of what put Georgia on the map, I believe, was Stacey Abrams, actually her involvement with the Secretary of State's office It just became the epicenter. And it's stunning to me because Georgia is not a red state. I'm still convinced of that. Georgia is, with the exception of Atlanta, which is, of course, a major population area of the state. But the state as a whole is very much red. And I think we're going to see that this coming year. I believe President Trump is going to win Georgia. But the whole thing was a major blip. And it was for all of these reasons that I ended up running for Secretary of State in Georgia, because I felt like our Secretary Raffensperger had compromised, allowed our election processes to be compromised, and we needed to restore confidence and election integrity in our state.
There's so many stories coming out, and I know you know them, Jody. I don't know if you, you can hardly dare to talk about voting machines, but we can talk about them generically, I'm guessing. As I understand it, this happened everywhere. I just know you're an expert, certainly, on what happened in Georgia. The voting machines became central, and they still are central. And so this is something we are wrestling with now coming into 2024. You talked about something really triggered a memory. You said you saw these committees immediately forming after COVID, the first COVID outbreak, to start election reform and to make exceptions to rules. I had a similar experience, just it was by myself watching J.E.H. Johnson, Director of Homeland Security under Obama, coming up to the 2020 election. He was just giving a speech. It was just an afternoon, and I happened to be watching. And he started talking about how he felt, now this is before voter fraud was a big conversation among, this is before 2020. So he says, out of nowhere, I think then therefore we're going to have to federalize elections. This is like 6 months before the 2020 election. And I thought, what? They do signal what they're going to do. When you become aware, you can see that it's a total manipulation, which is, I think, what you're describing. Do you discuss that in the book, the manipulation of our elections?
Yeah, I don't know how else to describe it. You kind of feel like you're going down this conspiracy route if you say this thing was all planned and all that, with COVID and all that sort of stuff, that was the instrument to change election law. It ended up, I believe it was the instrument of change. I saw it week after week after week with these hearings. And then before you know it, states all across the country are changing their election laws, including my own state of Georgia, and that's where the Secretary of State came in, without the legislative bodies of these states. It's either happening from the governors or secretaries of states, whatever. There are unilateral decisions being made to alter how our elections are done all across the country. And I'm sitting here saying, what in the world is going on? These are processes that never, ever would have been permitted had it not been for COVID. But COVID became the springboard to not only tolerate, but to promote all sorts of election changes that I believe produced massive compromise in our election confidence as a whole. And as a result, people today have largely, I think a lot of states have helped, but largely people have lost confidence in the accuracy of our election processes. And that has to change. This whole election thing is, and this is the title of the book, it's a sacred trust. This is something that is the heartbeat of the consent of the governed under which we live in this country. It is the heartbeat, the centerpiece of the will of the people being expressed, and of us being a self-determining people as to who will represent us and what kind of policies will we live under. All of that comes under the security and the accuracy of our election processes. And if in that regard, it is a sacred trust that cannot be politicized. Obviously, we vote about political issues, but the process cannot be politicized. It must be defended and protected at all costs. That is the primary means, virtually the only means we have as individual peoples to maintain control of our government rather than the government taking control over every aspect of our lives.
You know, Jody, I played, as you heard, that a clip from 2010 when Iraqis went to vote in by the thousands and dipped their index finger in that blue ink, and they were so proud to have had a choice. They'd never had a choice before. And it reminds me, I've been reading Democracy in America by the French historian Alexis de Tocqueville, and I know you're familiar with that. And he wrote, he toured America after the Revolutionary War, before the Civil War. And he, one of the things I just read was that he was talking about how Americans everywhere were talking about elections. They were excited. They were so enthused about being a part of the process. They were so, they were very serious about it. He said they're so serious about it. They take their citizenship so seriously. I don't know where we lost that, Jody, but we have certainly lost that.
We have, and we've got to get back to it. Sam, I mean, this is a critical part of our entire system of governance. And if the integrity of the ballots is lost, I don't know how we get back to it. Like you read earlier, while we were coming into the program, I may be upset if my candidate loses in an election, but if it was a fair election, I can go back 2 years from now and try to convince people otherwise. But if the election process was compromised, then what do you do? How do you fix that if the will of the people is not allowed to be accurately demonstrated? Then we have serious, serious issues that become virtually impossible to overcome. That's why this issue has to remain a top priority. That's why it is a sacred trust, and that we have to do everything in our power, both from the citizens' point of view as well as the government's point of view, to make sure that our election processes are protected and secured in every way possible.
Let me read from your book. Patriotic citizens cannot sit idly by while the foundations of the country are being tampered with and gradually destroyed. It is every person's duty to pass liberty on to the next generation. Citizens must get into the arena and be present. We, the people, must be heard before it's too late. Any practical suggestions about that before I let you go, Jody? Any practical things that people need to be doing?
You know, it's there are so many things, and every state has different laws, right? I mean, the Constitution says the time, place, and manners of elections are left to the individual states. So from that perspective, there are nuances and differences in every state. But the bottom line is this. We've got to do everything in our power as citizens to hold our elected officials accountable to secure and protect our election processes. That's what we can do on that end of things. And I think overall, we've done a pretty good job at that. There have been dozens and dozens of states across the country that have passed very good election security laws. There are some states that have not, but by and large, there's been a widespread national movement to secure the election processes from one state to another. But then on the individual basis, we've got to be involved in the process, not just in voting, but in the process as much as possible. The more there are boots on the ground, the more eyes on the ground, the less likely that shenanigans are going to be taking place. And if you are present and you see something, you got to blow the whistle. I mean, you got to say, look, this is not right, what's going on here. And I do think coming into this upcoming election, most states are, and I'll say the GOP at least as a whole, is aware of this. They have done a pretty good job at preparing individuals from pretty much all the states to be poll watchers, to be involved in the process and to watch what's going on. So those are the two things, keeping our elected officials accountable and alert to do their role to secure elections. But then as individual citizens, we've got to be engaged in this thing as well. And as we get closer and closer, we've got to volunteer to be poll workers and that type of thing, to be present when the election day actually gets here.
Okay. Jody Heiss, the book is called Sacred Trust, Election Integrity and the Will of the People. He's the founding member of the House Freedom Caucus, a former member of Congress from Atlanta, and now the senior vice president at Family Research Council. Jody, thank you so much for this book, and thank you for your time this morning. This is Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Abortions performed by Planned Parenthood were among the top leading causes of death in America, revealing the terrifying truth of the left's anti-life agenda. According to Planned Parenthood's 2022-23 annual report, abortions performed by the organization accounted for the top four leading causes of death. Think about that. Paid for by our tax dollars. And honestly, this freight train is going down the track so fast and so powerfully. It's really hard. It's going to be hard for us to stop this. And I think one of the best ways, I've said before, I'll say again, is preborn. Preborn, who is not part of the government, not part of the public debate or campaigns, but an organization that's simply providing ultrasounds for moms who are pregnant and doubting whether they should carry the baby to allow them to see their baby through ultrasound. It's an amazing process, and it actually works. When the moms see their babies, I think it doubles the chance that they will not take the life of their baby. You know, you can't beat those odds. If you'd like to help, $28 pays for one ultrasound, just one, and you can send however much you can afford. Go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. Hi, this is Sandy Rios, and I miss you in the mornings. But now I'm hosting a podcast, Sandy Rios 24/7, which is available at AFR.net and SandyRios.com. Well, I finally finished that book. God's Velvet Hammer chronicles God's call in my life from a small town girl to Berlin, Germany, Radio Moscow to North Korea to Washington, D.C. I talk about Sasha Girl. It was my disabled daughter. I talk about I Got the Music in Me. That's a chapter on my music life. Lost in India and Other Adventures is hilarious. You won't want to miss it. I talk about my sweetheart, The Blessing of Bruce. And then a mysterious chapter called My Green Face and the End of It All. Oh, I think you'll enjoy it. Like the Apostle Paul, these are my shipwrecks and my adventures. All for Christ and His kingdom. God's Velvet Hammer is available wherever books are sold. And remember, Sandy Rios 24/7 is available at AFR.net and SandyRios.com.
What you're about to see is disturbing.
So this is 1 o'clock in the morning.
Don't we all vote at 1 o'clock in the morning?
On one night, this person, this mule, went across six counties to 27 different drop boxes.
I call it the Mexican Mafia, seriously, because they work like that.
This is jaw-dropping.
What you showed is frightening.
It's just sickening to me.
Now we come to the most important question of all. Was the magnitude of vote trafficking enough to tip the balance in the 2020 presidential election?
It's not a leap to say this would have made a difference.
They have ruined Election Day in the United States of America. That's provable. And that's enough for me to fight the left with every fiber in my body.
Without free and fair elections, we are not a democracy. We are a criminal cartel masquerading as a democracy.
2,000 mules.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. Of course, you heard that's the last part of the trailer for 2,000 Mules, that powerful documentary by Dinesh D'Souza. So here we are. We're coming up to the 2024 election, and I talked with Jody about what you can do, but I want to actually get a little bit more specific with you on some things I think we should all be doing. First of all, you're going to be voting for lots of candidates, and you probably know that you must vote in the primary. If conservatives prevail at all, they have to win in the primary. That's usually where they lose because people think, that's not important, I'll vote in the general. But by that time, conservatives did not get enough votes, and they because they'll be challenged by people that are more popular, have better name recognition sometimes, or the left will come out in droves because they understand this, that they want their candidate, the weaker of the two, the whatever, in that particular primary. So if you want a conservative candidate to win, you have to vote in the primary. And then, God willing, they advance to the general election, and that's when you go out and you make sure you support them again. But when you're choosing candidates, one thing I think is very important, ask them where they stand on election integrity. What have they done? It's talk is cheap. What have you done? What have you done, sir, to address this issue? What have you advanced bills or principles, or have you made this public that you're concerned about it? What have you done? And if they won't talk about election integrity, and many, now I'll talk about Republicans, many Republicans just won't talk about it. Think about Mitch McConnell. There was no voter fraud. Joe Biden was elected fairly and squarely, and he is now the president, and President Trump just failed. That's what they want us to say. They want us to all say the same thing. At the same time, the social media platforms have shut down sharing of information on election integrity. I think that's beginning to change. There's a little window of right now where mainstream media is discovering and reporting on these new stories of more voter fraud being discovered and more ways of voting badly in 2020 and also 2022. So some of the stories are making it through. But I, if you are on Facebook, if you're on Instagram, which is owned by Facebook, you're not going to know anything about voter fraud. It's as though it doesn't exist because there's, and Google, same thing. If you want to find a story, I was looking in prep for this show today for some of the old videos of voter fraud, things we discovered, reports in the 2020 election, and I couldn't find them. So that's the way it is. We have like a blackout of information on this. So if you are trying to get information to your friends about voter integrity, this is hard, but it's probably a good idea for you to develop a longer mailing list for your email. That's the best way now until Gmail starts booting those out. And I think they will in time. I think they already are surveilling us a bit through our email. But for this right now, this is a good way to share information, tips, things that are happening that you see in your neighborhood, your state. I'm not saying don't post it on social media. Give it a try, but chances are it'll never, it will be muted and people will never see it. But still, we need to pull out all the stops to make sure that 2024 is equal and fair. The last thing that I want to say is you need to please consider, I'll say it that way, please consider signing up to be a poll worker. I don't mean a volunteer. I mean someone who's actually paid, so that you can be on the inside and you can actually see what's happening and make sure, there's training for that. Make sure that you know what you're watching for and be an active participant. Watch, do your part in your precinct. Some of you, could be precinct captains in your party. That's a good thing. You could run for that. I've known several people that have listened to me through the years who've done that and become involved in that way. I'm not preaching a party. I never do because I believe most of the good people are Republicans now. There used to be some good Democrats. I just don't see them anymore. The last pro-life Democrat was a guy from Chicago that I supported, interviewed, and they made sure they got him out because he was pro-life. He was in there for years, and his name escapes me for this moment. But I'm just telling you, the issue now is not party, although we have to work through parties. The issue now is people that love this country and its history, its constitution, its laws, and people who hate this country and want to destroy it. We are the great Satan. Even to our own children, I think, sometimes in our grandchildren, the school system has twisted them to believe that. So we have to infuse, those of us that remember the past, remember our roots, we have to infuse the joy of freedom and the joy of free elections and the importance of them. So that's my speech for today in closing. There have been many laws passed around the country, and there are so many people really working behind the scenes and in the scenes. Cleta Mitchell comes to mind. My good friend Cleta is one of the warriors on this issue. So is Judicial Watch. They're doing great work. And there are many, many others. So Jay Christian Adams, our good friend, and lots more. Hans von Spakovsky, I don't want to leave anyone out, but I'm sure I am. They are working night and day to make sure that the things are cleaned up, but there aren't enough of them. So they need eyes on the ground. They need people that are actively involved that really want to help, and you might be that person or those people. Okay, well, listen, I really do appreciate you listening to the show. You can call me at 662-821-2040, 662-821-2040. You can, go on our Facebook page. You can go to sandyrios.com. You can listen to the show there. You can also find out more information about things and stuff. You can listen, certainly, on our home mothership at AFRAmericanFamilyRadio.net, AFR.net. And you can listen on any podcast platform to Sandy Rios 24/7. All right, well, so for today, thank you. Thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.